Hello everyone and welcome to episode 73 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Sean German of the Next Scene podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Yes.
Excited to be here.
I'm excited to be here too, but I'm not looking forward to seeing what's going to happen to Julian. So,
yeah,
we'll have to figure that one out. All right, so episode 73 begins with everyone trying to figure out what to do with Julian, and ends with Doc looking around for Babe. So we ended things yesterday. They were in the middle of a firefight, and Julian got hit. And very graphically, we got to see how he got hit. And the men were trying to figure out how they're going to save him. And we also have Babe doing his darndest, as they say, to try to get close enough to Julian that he can pull him to safety. But we left things yesterday where he wasn't able to do that. So we're going to have to see how that is going to play out today. We first get the main shot of Julian lying on the ground with all the men relatively close, but not able to get to him, with shots and bullets flying all over the all around there. And then the shot quickly changes, and we see Peacock running through the forest towards Doc Rowe. And Rowe stands up and goes, "What's happening, sir?" He goes, "We're pulling back. We made contact." He goes, "I got to go to the CP." Now, it's a little strange, this whole conversation. You know, we made contact, we're pulling back, and I've got to go to the CP. As anyone who's seen this knows, Peacock is not a terrible commander. He's also not the best, but everyone seems to like him. But the way that the dialogue says here makes it sound as if he's like, "Okay, we made contact. I got it." It makes him sound like Lieutenant Dyke, and Lieutenant Dyke we know is very much of a coward and more problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a little strange that this is what they're showing, but I guess that's what it is.
Yeah. Okay. I was a little confused by that, and I'm glad it's not just me about, he seemed to be, and I don't know if that, maybe that was expected to, like, as soon as possible, give a report to the captain and to go directly to CP. But it did seem like, the firing or the danger was in one direction, and he was going in the opposite direction as fast as he could.
Yeah. It's a little strange, but okay. Then we're back at the firefight, and once again, lots of bullets flying all around. We see Julian's lying prone on the ground, and Babe continues screaming to Julian. He goes, "Don't move, stop moving, or they'll keep firing. Stop moving." And one of the other guys goes, "Fuck, Sarge, what?" And he goes, "Pull back, we gotta pull back. Let's get the hell out of here, let's go." And, Babe is basically left pretty much alone there. Everyone else is moved out. They realize that they're pinned and there's nothing else that they can really do here. But we see that Julian keeps reaching out to Babe to try to get some help. It just doesn't seem to work. And, they just they give some covering fire, but, at this point they decide they got to get out of there. And Babe realizes he doesn't have much of a choice, and he goes, "Come on, stay with us, stay with us, hold on. Julian, stay with us, look at me, stay with us, look at me, hold on." And then Martin screams at him and goes, "Heffron, move." And he goes, "Don't move, Billy, we're coming back." And he goes, "We'll get you out of here, just hold on." And he goes, "Go, let's go." And they basically have to get up and just leave him, which is... again, a very sad situation where they need to leave a man a man down, you know, in the middle of this firefight, because they just, you know, they need to save themselves and don't have a way of trying to save him. So it's, you know, quite problematic from that perspective.
It's yeah, it's tough to watch. It's hard, and I imagine it'd be. I mean, I can't even imagine how difficult it is for to be in that position and have to leave a man behind like that. But yeah, really had no choice. It was basically you could leave one body there, or there could be two bodies there.
Exactly. Now, the book talks a little bit about this situation here, and it says the platoon on page 149 of the book. The platoon plunged into the woods. Immediately, the columns lost touch with each other. The squads lost touch with their scouts. The snow was soft, not crunchy, and the silence complete. It was broken by a short burst from a German machine gun. Private John Julian, a scout for Second Squad, was hit in the neck, and Private James Welling, scouting for Third Squad, was also hit. So, first of all, did he screamed out Billy? So I'm a little confused if his name was John Julian, but the machine gunners from Easy set up their weapons and prepared to return fire. Private Robert Burr Smith of First Squad opened up with a long burst in the direction of the German firebase. When he paused, the Germans let loose another burst of their own. Christensen shouted for Martin. No answer. For Randleman. No answer. For Peacock. No answer. Only more German fire. The first platoon's being decimated, Christensen thought. He shouted again. Bull Randleman came through the woods to answer. Have you seen Martin or Peacock? Randleman had not. Another burst of machine gun fire cut through the trees. We have to make a move, Randleman said. He joined Chris in calling for Martin. No answer. Let's get the hell out of here, Chris suggested. Bull agreed. They called out the orders to the men and fell back to the railroad. There they met Martin, Peacock, and the remainder of the platoon. The patrol had not been a great success. First platoon had uncovered the German MLR and discovered that the German OPs were thinly manned and stretched out. But it had lost one man killed, Julian, and one wounded, and failed to bring in a prisoner. It spent the night shivering in the foxholes, eating cold beans and fritters, wondering if the weather would ever clear so that the 101st could be resupplied by air. So again, this is, you know, this is all it says about the fact that Julian got hit and killed. You know, I think they did a great job of visualizing it for us, that we get to see what really happened, you know, in this very difficult situation where you don't know how to respond and what you need to do. But in the end, you know, it's a question of survival, trying to figure out a way of keeping as many of the men safe as possible.
Yeah, and making tough choices. We see after the company has retreated, Julian's there. There's a couple not random shots, but like just a few gunfire, you know, a few rifle shots. So you know, the Germans are still there, they're still shooting, and you know, he's still moving. And then that's the last we see of Julian.
That's right.
I mean, we can kind of presume what happens next, but there's a certain amount of unknown. And you know, kind of as you know, leaves us in the viewer in a similar position as the soldiers themselves. I mean, kind of, you know, we saw the state he was in, so we can kind of imagine what's, you know, what's happening with Julian. But yeah, we don't know for sure because we can never go back to check because the Germans are there.
That's right. And I mean, I also like the juxtaposition in this episode, how it jumps back and forth between a very loud and you know, area where the men are shooting and they're in the middle of a firefight, and then you get to Dock Row and it's calm. You know, you see the you can feel the calm of the snowstorm around or the snow falling around them, and you know, you see a little bit of the mist, and then the men come through the mist. You know, they're running towards Doc Rowe. You know, he's not 100% sure how he's supposed to react to what's going on either. You know, one of the guys screams, "On me, move, come on, let's go." And they go, "Where the hell are we?" "Straight ahead, straight ahead." And then one of the guys goes, "Doc, Doc." He goes, "Okay, Chris has set it up on the rock. Easy up, lightning, over." I need a Jeep standing by at the op. Eye sharp. He goes, okay, I got your Jeep, Doc. He goes, Martin, sir, what's going on? He goes, they got Julian. And he goes, he's still alive. Don't know that. We got to get him, sir. Did you hit an op or their line? He goes, their line. He goes, we got to go back, sir. Get Julian out of there. Nope, fall back. He goes, we lost Peacock. He goes, he's back at the op. Come on, Martin. Fall back. He goes, all right, Doc. He goes, get him out of here. We got to fall back, Doc. Let's up and go. Because, you know, as they're running across, one of the guys, you know, gets hit. And, you know, Doc is doing what he can to try to, you know, stave off the, you know, the wound of the bleeding. He pulls out a bandage and starts, you know, bandaging. Once again, you know, they don't skimp on the gore here of trying to show the realism mm-hmm. of what these men are or what someone like Doc is going through when he needs to deal with, you know, wounded men. I like that they don't talk down to us with that. You know, it's gruesome, but it adds to the realism of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's done in the right way. It's not gratuitous, it's not trying to gross us out, but it is also not going to sugarcoat it and is not trying to protect us. This is the reality of this is war, and these are injuries that these people are succumbing to. So so if we're going to know their story, if we're going to see their story, then we're going to see the messy bits too.
Right. And I mean, we also see how quickly Doc takes care of this guy. You know, you also see a huge pool of blood in the snow. You know, once again, the white and the red contrasting one another. You know, the pureness of the white, and you know, the blood, you know, taking away from the pureness of it. I like the way they do that. And then they also just you know, the way they pick him up, the wounded guy, and just, you know, carry him off is also great.
Yeah. When we see Ro kind of going between those different modes, when he's, you know, he's kind of just checked out, when he's away from, you know, kind of away from the front lines, away from the action. It just, I don't know. For me, I see, I look at his eyes and his face, and it just seems like, you know, the eyes are open, but no one's home. It's like, he's just turned off for that moment. But then, you know, the men are retreating and they're shouting and medic and Doc, and then the switch goes back on, and then he's right back into it and he's back to work. And it seems it kind of, you know, kind of the trope is of, you know, shell shock or battle fatigue or whatever you want to call it, of guys just kind of, they reach their limit and they just check out. But you know, the reality is you can't really afford that. And particularly in, you know, if you're the medic, you've got the company depending on you, and he's not the only one, but, you know, he's one of few, and, you know, kind of like doesn't have the luxury of checking out completely, right? Because he knows these men, and he knows they're going to need him. And so he needs to be there and ready to act, you know, in these horrible circumstances.
Correct. But again, it goes back to the fact that the realism of the way that this is depicted to us, you know. And I like that. I like the way that they do that.
Yeah. And I can only presume, I've never been in anything approaching this kind of situation myself, but yeah, from what I've seen, you know, I've seen movies where I definitely feel like they're, you know, they're going for the shock value, they're going over the top to be extra gratuitous, and you know, lots of blood and lots of squibs and everything, and then the other end, there are films that really kind of sanitize the war experience, and this feels like it's right in the middle. It's not going for shock value. It's not being gratuitous, but it's not shielding us at the same time. kind of giving us the reality of as close as you can get to on on screen for someone who wasn't there, kind of giving you a taste of what it was like and what
Right, and the
happened.
point of view that they show here makes us feel as if we're right there with these guys. Especially with all the shouting between them.
Yeah, and I think you had mentioned it in the last segment, but the way we move along with the Jeep, but all the cinematography and the camera work in all these episodes has a real, a visceral feel where the kind of the camera moves around with the men, and when they're running, we're running, when they're, on a bumpy road, we're on a bumpy road, kind of helps that feeling of immersion to kind of put us with with the men in that situation.
And then the men continue to
Yeah.
debate what they're doing. Come on, Martin, fall back. You all right, Doc? Get him out of here. We gotta fall back, Doc. Let's up and go. Doc, we gotta move out. Come on, let's go. Get him up. Doc, now. Let's go. Move, let's go back. Fall back. And then the shot changes. And we get to see Martin. First of all, we see the men all sitting around. I don't know what in some ways maybe they look like they feel embarrassed about the fact that they needed to retreat. You can especially see Malarkey, Scott Grimes, sitting there feeling that way, looking as if he's feeling that way. And that really g it gives off that vibe, I guess you could say. That that in some ways they feel ashamed of what they've done because it could have been any of them that got shot that was left there also. I think that's part of it. It's not just that they left Julian. It's that it today that bullet had Julian's name on it. Tomorrow that bullet could have one of the other guys' names on it. And if people are in a dire situation, they might just leave you there. And nobody wants to be left for dead, I guess you could say.
And for to what end or what was gained? Like, I think they understand sacrifice, and they understand that they're fighting for a cause and maybe a greater good, and can accept that. Like, if we're gonna do something and we're gonna make some sacrifice, let it be for some purpose. But in this little exercise, they walked out. They found the German line, which I guess they didn't know before. Otherwise, they maybe wouldn't have walked as close to it. But they walked out. They found the German line. They got fired at. They walked back. So, what was gained? What was the good, for it? And they lost a man. They lost at least one man, and we know others were injured. Presumably not fatal, but we don't know their status yet. Or, I don't know if we will learn the everyone's status, but they've lost at least one man, and they got to think about, like, we didn't take an enemy position, we didn't gain some piece of intel, we didn't gain ground. Well, so what was it for? We lost a man, we didn't gain anything, we retreated. It's not a good day. So you can kind of see it, see the men as a group in their faces and their body language, but then you can see Roe is off, kind of even separate from them. And even I guess even more down, even in even darker mood. And maybe some of that is that he was left behind, that kind of my brothers went ahead and they faced this danger alone, and yeah, I'm here to help as I can, but I wasn't there with them at the front line when they needed help, and now I'm constrained into how much I can do, just the lack of resources, how much morphine I have, how many bandages I have, and plasma and everything else. And yeah, this is a dark moment for everyone, including Roe.
Exactly. And then we get a shot of Martin giving her his report to Winters. And he goes, "We couldn't get to him,
Yeah,
Captain. We tried. Babe tried. He couldn't get to him." And you can see the look on Winters' face. I mean, he wasn't there, but he feels just as bad as the rest of them about the fact that they had to leave Julian. He loves these men. He doesn't want any harm to come to them, and we're going to see it through the rest of the series, and we've seen it up until now. He does all he can to keep that as many of them safe in so many different ways. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, I think he in some part, he's got his military objective, but he's also got the objective of just, I need to go home with as many of these men as I can. And circumstances are making that part of the job very difficult. And also, I think he knows that, the sacrifice, and we'll see that in, I think in future episodes where like there are instances where the men are coming under fire and the orders are to charge. The orders are run, run towards the bullets and not away. And, part of the reason you get people to do that is through, some sense of duty or some sense of purpose. But part of that also has to be knowing that the company and their brothers have their back. That, if I run towards the fire, not only are my brothers running with me, but if something happens, they're going to get me out.
That's right.
And so to get this report of we had to leave someone behind, and you don't want that, when you give that order to run towards the enemy and run towards fire, you don't want that in the back of their head to think of, if something happens, are they going to have to leave me behind? Am I going to be the next one who's going to be left there, wounded but still alive while the rest of the company retreats?
Exactly.
So yeah, you don't want to have to do it, and you don't want your men to be thinking about it. So yeah, that can't be an easy report for Winter to be getting.
And I mean, we see also how Winters reacts from it. He goes over and sits with the men, and he goes, "Hey, Bo, let me sit in here with you guys," and he sits and commiserates with them about the fact that they've all just dealt with the fact of this shameful loss, I guess you could say. So I like that. And then the camera pans onto Doc, who's just looking. Again, Doc is like an observer here. He's not active in anything that's going on because he's always a little bit away from the action, and he's more of a someone just watching from afar, like us, I guess, from that perspective. And then Doc takes out the chocolate bar that he had gotten from Renee and just runs his hand away.
Yeah, he smells it. Yeah.
And then the scene changes, and now we're at night, and we see someone running through or walking briskly through through the woods, and we can see that it's Doc Rowe, and he looks into one of the foxholes and goes, "Heffern, Toy," and then gets up and starts running to go to a different foxhole, and he eventually actually finds a Toy, and he goes, "What are you doing out here?" And Toy goes, "Thanks for the boots, Doc. I'm doing fine." He goes, "You still having trouble with your feet?" And he goes, "Show me. Let me see it." And he takes his foot out of his of his boot, and he goes, And Doc looks at it and goes, "It's trench foot, Toy. If it turns gangrene, you can lose it," which is a little ironic for anyone who I won't spoil everything for anyone who hasn't seen who for anyone who's watching along. Let's put it that way. And Toy goes, "I ain't coming off the line, Doc." He goes, "Well, you gotta stay dry. Massage your feet. Change socks every day, and dry the wet ones around your neck." And he goes, "I'm trying." He goes, "Do it." He goes, "I'm working on it." He goes, "You seen Heffern?" "No, why?"
I'm working on.
"Yeah, seriously." "I'm working on it." "You seen Heffern?" "No, why?" He goes, "He ain't in his hole." Then Toy goes, "Oh, So, do you know what trench foot is?
No. Yeah, no. I kind of hesitate because I realized I hadn't asked myself that question before. I know that I have seen it come up in other movies, and I don't remember the particular movie, but I know that there was it was a war movie about Vietnam, about US soldiers in the Vietnam War. And there was a scene where a soldier is trying to get trench foot. I think they're like purposely wearing like wet socks and letting their boots get wet as a way to get out of fighting, as a way to get trench foot and to get taken off the line. I don't remember what movie it was, but I thought that was an interesting contrast where there, there that was a soldier who was like trying to cultivate an injury as an excuse to get out of fighting. And here is a soldier who is, trying to cover up the severity of the problem and trying to, say, hey, he ain't coming off the line. And this is what I thought of when you were asking me if I had a comment on the first section that we talked about. I think it's a similar thing that, or I would tie it together that, these men, they want to stay for their brothers. I mean, maybe they have an individual sense of duty, or they're looking for, some glamour, some accomplishment they think they can have personally through valor or bravery or whatever. But I think more than that, it's they want to be there for their brothers. They know that the company depends on any everyone, and if anyone is out for any reason, that affects that affects the whole company, that affects everyone. So yeah, whereas some other war movies or war fiction from a different conflict or a different time will feature soldiers trying to get out and maybe playing up or leaning into any sort of injury. Here we see a case where like no, they don't want to go, and they will fight through even when they shouldn't. And we've seen other cases, in addition to the trench foot. But that may be, but then the flip side of that is they also look out for each other, and they try to give they try to give each other breaks, what little they can, as often as they can. So when the sergeant tells Doc to stay behind, this is what was it? This is a combat patrol, you stay behind. I don't know if there's any reason why you wouldn't bring a medic along on that particular mission or that walk or that patrol, other than you see like, okay, this guy is being worn thin. And what little break, even if it's just a few minutes to a few hours while we're on patrol, that he has some downtime, that we see them, they give each other downtime or breaks when they can. They will take over patrols. They will say, go to town and get a hot meal. And then so I think those two things go hand in hand. That one, they don't want to leave the line. They want to be there for their brothers, but they will encourage others to, to do the thing they won't. They will encourage others to, go off the line or take time or, give them a break whenever they can, to kind of help them give whatever mental or physical rest they can. Also knowing that, all those respites are going to be brief. Whatever comfort you can give someone, it's only a matter of time before, before you're under fire again, or you're on patrol again, or something else is coming up. So I think this is kind of a quick little thing, and it's following up on the boots that we saw. We saw Ro pick up back at the church. Kind of closing that loop, but it says a lot about, about about the brotherhood, about these men looking out for each other and becoming brothers and becoming a family through the trials.
Okay, so first of all, I will enlighten you about the.
But so that was a very long answer, very long way to say, no, I have no idea what trench foot is, other than I guess it comes from wet socks.
Okay, well, first of all, as soon as you described it, I knew the answer. So the scene you're talking about is in Platoon, where Junior is
Okay.
spraying
Was it Platoon? All right.
mosquito spray on his feet in order to make his feet look like he's got trench foot in order for them to take him off the line. So that is the answer to that question. And now I will answer
Okay.
what
All right.
trench foot
Platoon.
is.
Yeah.
Yes. So trench foot is a It's also known as immersion foot. It's a serious non-freezing cold injury caused by prolonged exposure of feet to cold, damp, and unsanitary conditions. It occurs when wet feet are confined in cold, tight, or damp footwear for anywhere between 10 to 24 hours, causing blood vessels to constrict, damaging tissue, nerves, and circulation. So the symptoms are tingling, itching, numbness, and swelling. Feet may turn pale, blue, or red, and become cold and blotchy. As it progresses, severe pain, blistering, and open sores may develop. Obviously, it happens in cold, above freezing, and wet conditions, often from standing in water or mud. So the treatment is basically just cleaning your foot, drying it, gently rewarming the feet. If you have severe cases, you need medical intervention to avoid infection or tissue death. And what's funny is it says here, what's the prevention? The prevention is the primary defense is keeping feet clean, warm, and dry, which includes changing damp socks and shoes frequently. Now, I don't know if that really is going to help, you know, someone like Joe Tilly, but because of where he is.
Yeah. When you're in a cold, wet environment and walking is your primary mode of transportation, then this is a potentially serious situation.
Yeah, I didn't
and,
get
one that's gonna hard to
yeah,
avoid.
Yeah, I didn't get the line of him telling that you should dry your wet socks around your neck. I don't get that. I don't understand why what the purpose of doing that is. But okay, I'm not a medical doctor. And so it also says here that it's famously associated with World War I. Because soldiers who were in trenches, quite often got the trench foot, from where they were. Anyone who's seen 1917, you know that there's a lot of water all around also, when these guys were just in trenches and stuff like that. But it's still very common today for people who are hikers, people in the military, and also in homelessness scenario.
Yeah,
it makes sense that, that's how they would... they would do this. And then Dacro just takes off trying to find Heffron, doing all he can to try and find him. You got to give him a lot of credit here. I mean, do you think he's seeking out Babe because of the fact that he thinks that Babe might be the most distraught about having left Julian to die?
Yeah, I think so, because I think it's a bit of a mental health call, maybe not strictly under his duties as medic. I'm thinking at this point, in this situation and this time, in the 40s, 1940s, they're probably strictly thinking of medic as a physical thing for physical injury, but yeah. That's going to take a psychological toll. And I think, that's a reason to seek someone out and try to provide some of your medic services or whatever you
exactly.
can.
And then, Dacro finds another trench and moves into it and seems to have found Heffron. And that's how this 5 minute segment ends.
And that's the end of this 5 minutes.
That's right. Is there anything else you wanted to say about this segment?
No, I think we've covered the having to leave Julian behind, and then the stress and discomfort and whatever the pain of doing that, and then the attitude of the men. Doc, the feet. I think the only thing, actually, the only other note I have that we didn't mention is when after the retreat, when they fall back, and the sergeant is telling Winters about having to leave Julian behind, and the men are sitting around. I don't know who it is. There's someone who's got a cough. That sounds bad. That sounds like that isn't just my I'm a little my throat's dry from running, from falling back, or just the cold or something. Like, someone's got some like respiratory something going on. And I think another case, like similar to the trench foot, someone who they could probably make a case for what they need is to be dry and warm for a little while, and it would probably do them good to be away from the front line, but that would mean being away from their brothers and someone who's just they're yeah, I got a cough. I'm gonna but I'm here, I'm gonna do my job, and I'm not gonna let me stop me. And oh, yeah, my foot hurts, my socks are wet. I don't have supplies, I don't have winter gear, I got a cough, whatever, but they've got a job to do, and they've got their brothers depending on them, and they're gonna do it. So yeah, so that cough, that's I think that was the only other note I had for this section. On the series as a whole, one, it's very good. I'm glad I watched it. It was sort of a blind spot in my pop culture knowledge. So I'm glad that you have the podcast. You gave me an opportunity or an excuse to go back
You're welcome.
and
You're
watch. So that was good.
welcome.
I did have something. Yeah, thank you. I did have a thought just on the whole series, but it occurred to me around this episode, kind of around the middle, episode 5 or 6, about the timing. And they're very like, they're upfront about the dates, and when they don't mention like month and day or month or year in the series, it's easy enough to look up. It's all based on actual events, so we can kind of look up when things happen. But it was only about halfway through that kind of one of the implications of that timing occurred to me, and that was that kind of this is late enough, and sort of the war was big enough that there were World War II movies before these soldiers joined, before they went to fight in World War II. They would have had the opportunity to see World War II movies while kind of while the war was going on, and even before. So I don't know how much that affected kind of what they did. It certainly would have affected their motivation. A lot of the movies
Propaganda.
were very very patriotic, very pro-war, and kind of like encouraging people to draft. In the United States at the time, there was a production code also called the Hays Code, which was really de facto censorship, that a major movie studio in Hollywood would have a government censor on the lot reviewing scripts. But also the studios themselves were very, I guess, I don't know, not necessarily pro-war, but pro-allies. A lot of the executives, even before Pearl Harbor, before the U.S. Officially joined the war, a lot of the Hollywood executives were Jewish, particularly at Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers, the
Right,
actual
of course.
brothers, of the Warner family, were all Jewish. Heading up that studio and took a particular interest in the goings on in Europe. So, yeah. So there were a lot of starting in 1939, even before the official outbreak of the war. There were a lot of movies, and particularly and early on, because they're before the war or early in the war, they weren't necessarily like war movies or action combat movies, but a lot of sort of spy and suspense stuff. So in 39, we had things like Confessions of a Nazi Spy, and South of the Border. South of the Border is an interesting one. It's about German spies in Mexico, trying to spark a revolution in order to disrupt the U.S. oil supply. So a lot of spies and suspense and intrigue about diplomats and correspondents and spies. And then, as we get closer to as action and kind of heat picks up, and we get closer to the U.S. entering the war and slightly after, there are a lot of actual comedies, just kind of lighthearted or romantic comedy movies, to kind of encourage people to enlist. There were Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy, both had both groups had World War II films in 41, and Bob Hope had one in 41 as well, Caught in the Draft, Kind of showing him draft, and of course, in 1940, there's The Great Dictator, with Charlie Chaplin, playing a Hitler-like figure, very barely disguised. And they didn't really make it's. I don't think it's officially about
Oh, I'm not
Hitler,
sure.
but it's a Hitler-type dictator that they're poking fun of. So I just you know I. I don't know if you agree or your listeners agree. I just thought it was interesting that, yeah, these soldiers would have had ample opportunity to watch World War II movies before, well before they go to Europe in 43. But even, as early as, again, as early as 1939 and 1940, Hollywood had started putting out World War II films. Not necessarily, not even in recognition or expectation that the U.S. would one day enter the war, though certainly there was, strong sentiment to support the Allies. In Hollywood there was that sentiment, but just to raise awareness and raise public support for our allies in Europe who would be fighting against Italy and Germany. So yeah, I just thought that was like an interesting thing that may have played into their motivation. Not that I think any of these soldiers imagined one day they would be, their actions would be portrayed in movie or a series like this. But again, in terms of the motivation, whether they, whether they're volunteering or just kind of, responding to the call when drafted, there would have been a push in the movies to support the effort and kind of send the message in terms of why people were fighting. I think that causes issues when there's questions, when you have, we'll see like later, police actions or wars that the United States gets involved in. There's not always a clear message, but in this case, they would have, in pop culture and in the movies, again, before they joined, there would have been a clear message from Hollywood saying like, this is a good war. This is, we're on the right side and there's a reason we're fighting. And then, that might have helped these soldiers to have, to have that, that sort of clarity of purpose or, that support, through, back home. But yeah, just, yeah, something again, something that just occurred to me about, probably around this point, halfway through the series, just thinking about the timing, what year it is for these men and what kind of what was going on back home and what they might have seen or heard about the war
Exactly. No, I
before
completely agree with you
joining.
on that. And I mean, it's funny that you mentioned the fact that these guys would have seen these movies before they were even drafted. But I mean, we see it in the show itself. There are at least two occasions where the men are sitting and watching a movie, which there are definitely connections to the two movies that we've seen them watching, that they are connected to, I guess, the war effort or things like that. Not blatantly war movies or action movies or anything like that, but the sentiments, as you mentioned. So yeah, 100%. I think you hit the nose on, you hit it right on the nose with that. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that and movies would have been really big at the time. Television had been invented, but
No, not
I
even
don't
close.
think it had overtaken the movies as sort of a main visual form of entertainment. So they would have movies would have included, movie would have been a
Exactly.
whole experience, double features, or there'd be newsreels and cartoons and other stuff. So, people weren't just getting their entertainment at the cinema. They would get, they would get news and current events and other things. So, yeah. So this, kind of the war and, the motivation, kind of just what we were fighting for, would have it would have been very important to see that in the movies, to see that portrayed, in cinema. It's we have to, I don't know, we, like you said, there's a couple scenes where we see them kind of they get movies for, for entertainment, for relaxation in the, in the field. I don't know if they ever specifically mention what they, what movies or what they would have watched prior to joining the army, but we've got to think they would have been exposed to one, just the news, coming out of Europe even before the U.S. joins the war, but they would have seen these movies and been aware of kind of that message coming through from Hollywood.
Right. Okay, all right. Thanks for bringing it up. I do appreciate that. All right, so today's special segment is World War II movie trivia. So we're going to randomly give you trivia questions about five World War II, possibly five World War II movies. It'll be five questions. It could be that all five questions will be about the same movie. But, yes, so let's spin the wheel and see what we got. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay.
Well, it's not going to be Platoon.
No, it will not be. I can guarantee that.
That's yes. Not a World War II movie, but sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Who are the captain and the XO of the submarine in Run Silent, Run Deep?
The captain and the XO. Do you want the character name or the actors?
No, the actors, the actors.
The actors. Run Silent, Run Deep.
It's from 1959, if that helps at all. Have you seen it? Or 1958, I'm sorry. 1958.
You know what? This is just a guess. I'm just going to throw a name out there. Is Ernest Borgnine in that?
No.
No. Then I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, so the answer is Clark Gable and Burt Lancaster.
Clark Gable and Burt Lancaster. Okay. That's star power. Yeah. Those two names right there, sure.
Yeah. And okay. You know, like other submarine movies, that, you know, like Crimson Tide. I mean, these characters really, you know, are at each other's throats the whole time. So yeah, it's a great depiction.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not. I think I've seen it, but it may have been like a few decades since I've seen it, so I don't remember too much. But all right.
Okay. Well, you see now you have something else to look forward to.
Yeah, I have something I can put on my list. Yeah.
There you go. All right, let's spin the wheel again. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, in what country does Hacksaw Ridge take place?
Hacksaw Ridge.
Or does the Battle of Hacksaw Ridge take place? That's a movie from 2016 about Desmond Doss' story.
Is that I haven't seen it. Is that the But it's like the Pacific. Is that in the Philippines? It's the Pacific Theater, right? Am I close? Okay. I have the right hemisphere.
It is in the Pacific Theater. It's in the Pacific Theater, so you got the right theater.
But okay, but not the Philippines.
Yes.
Hacksaw Ridge. Yeah, I don't know. I have to pass on another one.
Okay, so the answer is Okinawa.
It is Okinawa, okay.
All right, let's spin the wheel for the third question. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay. Who plays the title role in the movie The Desert Fox in 1951? From 1951.
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, man. So that's that's another film I haven't seen. But it's the titular character, the Desert Fox. I feel like I should know this. But it's so it's it's Rommel, right? Rommel was the Desert Fox.
Correct.
So I'm guessing it's a European actor who's playing the part.
You would be correct.
I wonder if I can logic it out. It's not David Niven, is it? No.
No, I mean you got the right country of the actor.
Oh yeah, you know what? It's one of those things where like one thing popped into my head and I know it's not right, but I can't get it out to make room for another thought. What's his name? It wasn't Lawrence of Arabia. No.
No, it was not.
Yeah, so no, not Peter O'Toole. I'm gonna have to pass again. I'm gonna go 0 for 3. I don't know this one.
All right, let's see if I can give you a hint.
Who played the Desert Fox?
Okay, he was in A Star Is Born. He was in North by Northwest. Does either of that help you?
North by Northwest. Well, I'm guessing it's not. I don't remember Cary Grant being in
No,
A Star Is
it's
Born.
not. It's not.
It's not James Mason, is
Yes, it is.
Wait, what? It what? James Mason?
Yes, it is.
All right, those were some very good hints. Okay, James Mason. All right, there you go.
Right, so let's spin the wheel for the fourth time.
Now that's definitely going on my list. Now I definitely want to see that now. James Mason as the Desert Fox. You've got me intrigued. All
Okay,
right.
great. There's no reason not to. And Mrs. Rommel is played by Jessica Tandy.
Oh, Jessica Tandy.
I
There you
don't
go.
know if Hume Cronin was happy about that at the time, but okay, in the 1949 movie Sands of Iwo Jima, who plays the lead character, Sergeant John Stryker?
So the Sands of Iwo Jima, Stryker. Well, I know there's a Stryker in Airplane. That's a different character, and that's a different movie. Robert Stack.
That is, it is not Robert. What
But
was his name?
he's not Stryker, yeah.
No, well, Robert Stack is in Air. Is in. He actually also is in Airplane, but he doesn't play Stryker.
Oh, Robert Hayes, right.
Robert Hayes. Robert Hayes. Yes, who Jim O'Kane famously was able to interview him for when he did the Airport movie.
Oh, yeah, for Airport Minute. I think I might actually know this one because this is a big one. It's a John Wayne movie, right?
Yes, it
John
is.
Wayne?
Yes, there you go.
Okay. Ooh, all
All
right.
right, right now you're 50%. This final question is the one that's going to be the clincher. So
Right.
let's spin the
No
wheel
pressure.
once again. No pressure whatsoever. None whatsoever. Okay, who plays the title character in the movie based on the TV show McHale's Navy from 1965?
There was a McHale's Navy movie
Yes. It's the same
based
person.
on.
It's the same person who plays the character on the TV show. And I will give you a hint. You have mentioned this person's name in today's episode.
Someone I've mentioned who was in The TV show and the was it Ernest Borgnine?
Yes.
Oh, woo! All right. 3 out of 5. That's better than
Yes, it
50%.
was. Very good. Nicely
Yeah. A lot of that is just thinking of
That's
like
right.
the actors of the
Nicely
time
done.
that
Nicely
these
done.
movies came out. Like I said, I haven't seen a lot of these World War II films, but yeah, that Desert Fox, that is definitely going on the list.
Yeah,
Definitely want to see that.
of course. Of
All
course.
right. I will. I will. All right. Yeah.
All right. Let me know what you think of it. I'll be interested in hearing.
Okay.
All right. And now we will play the daily game of name that World War II movie. So you never know. You might actually even get one of the ones that we just talked about again. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, it is not something that we discussed today.
Okay. That narrows it down a little
That's
bit.
right. It is a movie from 2012, starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and Gerald McRaney, and it was based on in or it was produced by George Lucas.
Is he a Navy diver?
No, I know what you're thinking of, but no, it's not that.
Oh.
You're thinking of, oh, what's that
Cuba
called?
Gooding.
With that one's actually with Cuba Gooding Jr. and De Niro. I actually really like that movie.
And De Niro, yeah.
Yeah, I don't
Okay.
remember the name of it. It was from like 2000, I think it was. You got me on a rabbit hole. Trying to think of it also has a great song
Was that Ra
that was Men of
was
Honor.
that Radio? Or no, that's a different one. That's Men of Honor.
Right, that was Men of Honor. Men of Honor was the one with
Okay, yeah. The first African American master diver in the
yes.
US Navy. Okay. All right. So anyway, all right. So Cuba Gooding Jr., what year?
2012.
2012. And it's World War II.
World War II. And like I said,
Yeah, well, see now
it's famously known for the fact that George Lucas is one of the executive producers because this is a movie that depicts certain things that are similar to the attack on the Death Star. How's that?
Okay. All right. So I'm guessing like planes, you know, aerial attack and the Air Corps. Yeah, so you're focusing in on two of my weak points, which are World War II movies and Cuba Gooding Jr. films. So you've got the overlap of two things where I'm really lacking. But George Lucas in 2012. Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna have to. I don't know. Can I get it? Is there any more hints? So
It's
George
about
Lucas, producer.
Tuskegee pilots.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. About which makes sense. You know, flying in World War II. Could be Junior. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry.
It is it's
I
called
didn't get this
it's
one.
called Red Tails.
Red Tails. Yeah. I wasn't. I don't know. I could have guessed all day. I would not have gotten to that. So Red Tails. All right.
Okay. You learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Whatever happened with Cuba Gooding Jr.? Is he still?
He's still laughing. Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. He's got. Oh, yeah.
According to IMDb, he had
Looking real quick
three,
at his
three,
IMDb.
three, three terrible movies that came out in 2025.
Yeah.
We're
Oh,
hey,
yeah. He's got. Yeah. He's working.
that's right. The three IMDb ratings for those three movies are 3.7, 3.6, and 4.3 out of 10.
All right.
All right.
So maybe there's a reason I don't know too many films, but hey,
Very possible.
work is work, you know, it's all good. But all right, Red Tails.
That is very possible. Oh, wow. He played O.J. Simpson on American Crime Story? Wow. Interesting. I did not know that.
Oh yeah. I also did not watch that.
Yeah, I didn't see the
I
one.
guess I got enough of that. I got enough of that trial that when it happened in real
Yeah,
time, I don't
no,
need to go
obviously,
back to it. But oh,
yeah, of course.
I said, yeah, O.J. Simpson. Okay.
Right, so Sean, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
No, they know where I am. So yeah, it's Sean. Nextscenepod.com, catandsean.org, or just hang around for the next movie, Rob movie, and I'll probably be back as a guest then too. So it's all
Well,
good.
if you behave yourself tomorrow.
If I behave myself, if I get more of these questions right, I'll have to study up before before
Well,
tomorrow.
tomorrow you only have one question that you have to worry about. So, So you're good from that perspective. No,
Okay. So not much homework. Gotcha.
not much, not much. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a movie I'm in. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieiminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Sean, you want to come back tomorrow? Or you want to keep your streak
I
the
would
way it
love to
is?
come back tomorrow. Yeah. No podcast left behind. I'm coming back.
Excellent. All right. So until tomorrow, Curry!
Curry!